Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. Today, our journey on Route 51 takes us to the Highway 10 exit in Stevens Point and then east to the tiny community of Custer, where thousands of people will be making a pilgrimage to the Midwest Renewable Energy Association headquarters and the 21st Annual Energy Fair. The fields will be filled this weekend with vehicles and campers, and the grounds will contain hundreds of exhibits devoted to saving America by building a green energy future and making a first step toward reducing our dependence on fossil fuel. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio, and this year's Energy Fest is particularly significant because of the grim news from the Gulf of Mexico. It has now been 58 days since the Deepwater Horizon transoceanic oil rig exploded, and each day tens of thousands of additional barrels of crude oil surge into the once pristine waters of the Gulf, threatening to destroy one of America's jewels and one of the world's most important ecosystems. If ever there was a reason to initiate a Manhattan-style project to create a green energy economy, it is this one. But there is no movement in the U.S. Senate to pass a comprehensive energy bill, and the bill that has already been passed by the House of Representatives sits awaiting action from a legislative system paralyzed by partisan politics. Joining us by telephone, Amanda Little, one of the keynote speakers at this year's Energy Fair, and the author of Power Trip, From Oil Wells to Solar Cells, Our Ride to the Renewable Future. Little's columns on green politics and energy have been published in Grist, Salon.com, The New York Times Magazine, Vanity Fair, Rolling Stone, Wired, New York Magazine, and The Washington Post. Here in our studio, we have Doug Stingel, Programs Director for the Midwest Renewable Energy Association, to give us the latest on this year's event. And as always, we want you to join the conversation. You can do that at 261-6371 if you're in the Wausau area. That's 261-6371, or anywhere you're listening, toll-free, 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Amanda, thank you so much for spending the next hour with us.
Glenn, it's great to be here.
And Doug, why don't we just start out with you? Tell us what's new at this year's Energy Fair.
Sure. Glenn, thanks for having me here. We have a tremendous fair lined up again this year. The 21st Annual Energy Fair is going to be bigger and better than ever. We've got a lot of great exhibitors and a lot of great workshops, about over 200 workshops, over 275 exhibitors. And then we've got some great keynote speakers, of which Amanda is the keynote speaker on Sunday. Bill McKibben, who wrote an incredible book called Earth that I'm reading right now, is going to be the speaker on Saturday.
And Bill McKibben is a legendary figure in green politics.
Yeah, absolutely. He wrote the book that kind of brought climate change, the first popular culture book on climate change 20-some years ago. So, yeah, we're really excited to have Bill on Saturday. And on Friday, we're going to have kind of a focus on local food and setting up local food networks. So there'll be lots of great workshops on how to grow your own food, how to create your own local food networks, how to store and maintain food. And then our keynote speaker will be Jeremy Solon out of Stevens Point, who was one of the founders of the Central Rivers Farm Shed Group, which is a local food group in Stevens Point, and kind of give you a lesson of how he did it, and you can go back to your own community and create this own your own local food movement.
What kind of entertainment venues do we have?
Sure. We've got Energy Fair favorites, Baba Ganoush, their local band. They've been playing the Energy Fair on Friday night for the last, I'd say, 15, 20 years. So they've been there almost since the very beginning. And then on Saturday, we're really excited to have the world premiere of the Renewsicle, which is a musical about renewable energy. And that'll be on our main stage at 6 o'clock. Local musician Ed Lamar put together a fantastic rehearsal. I saw him last night. They were doing rehearsal on the main stage last night. It looks fantastic. It's going to be a lot of fun and a little something for everyone.
This is such a big deal. And if anyone who's listening hasn't been out there, you have to swing by and just see this thing. It is huge, and it is so well organized for the number of people that you have coming into tiny Custer, and many of them camping and spending the entire 3 days of the festival, but many just in for one day, and there is certainly no lack of things to do.
Absolutely not. We really have something for everyone. You know, if you're interested in renewable energy, we've got something for you. If you're just interested in maybe how you can save some money on your utility bills or how to remodel your home in a green type of way, we've got workshops for you. We really have, like I said, over 200 workshops. We've got kids activities. We've got hands-on demonstrations of green building techniques for cordwood, straw bale. We've got something for everyone.
And in past years, you've had alternative vehicles on the premises. I'm sure that given what's happened recently with the oil spill, everyone is focusing their attention on electric cars right now.
Sure, absolutely. We'll have the Clean Energy Car Show, so folks will bring in their cars, their demonstration vehicles, and show us how they've done it. There's even a workshop by a gentleman how to build your own electric car, which I think will be fascinating. He's the...
No kidding.
Yeah, he's from the Electric Vehicle Association, so that's going to be a lot of fun and a lot of great information.
Well, Doug, how has the oil spill affected the vibe for this year's event?
Well, it's pretty, you know, it's been going on for a couple of months here, so it's kind of getting people's attention. People are becoming a little bit more cognizant of where our energy comes from and what we're doing to get that energy. So they're trying to think of ways that they can either conserve or even switch to a completely different energy. So we've seen some interest peak, and hopefully we'll have lots of folks come on out and to the energy fair and learn a little something about what they can do about it. You know, we can all look at those pictures of the oil just gushing out of that well down in the ocean, and it just breaks your heart, quite frankly. And you know, you can come and do something positive about that. You can come to the energy fair and you can learn something about how we can kind of reduce our dependence on fossil fuels.
Amanda Little, your book Power Up begins with an overview, or Power Trip begins with an overview of our dependence on oil, how it developed, how we use oil for virtually everything, from energy to war to consumer products and plastics and fertilizer. And then you go on to look at green energy alternatives. What got you motivated to write this thing?
Well, it actually started with a very quiet little personal tour of my own life. I had spent about 10 years writing about energy and technology and innovation, and had spent some of that time criticizing the government for failure to promote innovation and accelerate markets and these oil alternatives and fossil fuel alternatives, until one day I kind of took a look at my own life, and I realized fairly suddenly that almost everything in my midst, my desk, my keyboard, my cell phone, my corn muffin, my clothing, the paint on my walls, the ink in my pen, the Tylenol in my purse, the lip balm and mascara, and I mean, you name it, pretty much everything in my midst, including my body, because of course I had driven to my office, was there because of fossil fuels.
You can't get away from it, and to think that just 100 years ago, fossil fuels weren't even a significant part of the American experience.
It's been exactly. It's been an absolutely transformative shift for our nation, and a great one. I mean, what I began to realize as I took a journey back into history and tried to understand the origins of this enormous appetite for fossil fuels that we've developed, I began to see that cheap oil and coal and natural gas built our superpower. They gave us the freedoms and the comforts and these extraordinary, technologies that we and industries that we enjoy today.
Yeah, what I find interesting about your book, Amanda, is that it is polemical, but not overly so. It really is more of a history book than anything else. It gives you a very good, clear, and I would say an objective overview of exactly how we ended up where we are today and the historical events that led up to it.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that. I mean, I personally, came to terms with what I felt was my own hypocrisy. I mean, I was criticizing these industries for their environmental costs and the military costs of our dependence on foreign oil, but I'm still very, very concerned about those costs. I mean, more than ever before. But I also began to realize that I was as much to blame as everyone else, because everything in my life was so intimately entwined with these resources. And what happened also was this very positive kind of celebratory revelation that I had, which was that I thought that oil was a bad word, you know, this kind of nasty thing, when in fact it's the source of so many creature comforts I use and love, and so many survival tools I need.
And even if we stop using it predominantly for energy, we will, at least not in the foreseeable future, stop using oil.
That's true. I don't really foresee, you know, a scenario where we go cold turkey on oil. I think that the reality is that we're using it in very wasteful ways in some circumstances, and we're using it in very constructive, sophisticated ways in others. I think that burning oil in gas tanks is kind of like burning 14th century antiques in a bonfire. I don't think it's the best and highest use of this very, very precious resource. So I think we're seeing that already. We're seeing this transition to hybrid and eventually electric cars, where we move our transportation system off of oil. But then petrochemicals that are used to make sophisticated plastics and medicines and so forth, and even fertilizers and farming additives, which themselves have problems, but nevertheless, in some cases, are very
creating everything from the clothes we wear to the food we eat to the way we communicate. Imagine trying to find a wooden cell phone.
Right. Imagine trying to find a wooden cell phone, or for that matter, a wooden keyboard, a wooden laptop, a wooden dashboard on your car. I just look, anyone who's listening to this right now can look around them in their cars, in their pocketbooks. Everything that we're touching almost has some kind of varnish, some kind of gloss, some plastic or synthetic fabric, synthetic element, and we owe that in certain circumstances that are very environmentally beneficial. For instance, some of the new auto bodies that we're developing are made from very lightweight, sophisticated plastics.
The smart cars, which weigh like 1,500 pounds instead of 4,500 pounds or 5,000 pounds.
Precisely. So there are applications of oil and sophisticated, applications of the substance that can be great for the environment, that can improve fuel economy, for instance. But then there are other applications that are extremely wasteful.
Well, Amanda, what's refreshing about your take on all of this is how optimistic you are. Instead of the doom and gloom and end of the world predictions, you seem to think that American ingenuity and know-how, which created this problem, will somehow get us out of it.
I believe that strongly. I think the first principle is this. Before we understand our abuse of fossil fuels, we have to understand our use of them, right? So a lot of us are spending this time now, as we see, the extremes that we're going to get this resource. This crisis mode that we're in, which is saying, here we are plunging drills 30,000 feet into the earth to get oil at this incredible risk and cost. And we're focusing on the abuse and the failures in the system. But it's going to take a lot of time to, and effort and energy and willpower, political will, to begin to, shift away from these fossil fuels. So that's going to require optimism. It's going to require humility, and it's going to require an appreciation for what we've gained from the use of these fuels.
Well, Amanda, hold that thought. I'm going to take a quick break, and then when we come back, I want to talk about deep water oil drilling and the Gulf spill and your experiences on a transoceanic oil rig very similar to the one that ended up exploding and burning in the Gulf of Mexico. I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We're talking about energy, green energy, with Amanda Little. She's one of the keynote speakers at the Midwest Renewable Energy Fair this weekend in Custer, Wisconsin. Doug Stingle, the organization's programs director, is also with us. The only thing missing is you, 1-800-780-9742, if you'd like to join the conversation. That's 1-800-780-9742. We will be back after this.
From the fountains and the mountains comes the water running cool and clear and blue. And it flows down from the hills and it goes down to the towns and passes through. When it gets down to the cities, then the water turns into a dirty gray. It's poisoned and polluted by the people as it flows along its way. Don't go near the water, children, see the fish all dead up on the shore. Don't go near the water, water isn't water anymore.
Support for WPR comes from UMR, a United Healthcare company providing employee benefits administration, integrated health management, and pharmacy benefits administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
The subject is the Midwest Renewable Energy Fair, green energy, and of course, the Gulf oil spill. Our guest, Doug Stingel of the Midwest Renewable Energy Association, and also Amanda Little, whose book, Power Trip, is really a history lesson as much as an advocacy piece for green energy. Amanda, I was struck by the fact that your book started the very first chapter on deep water oil drilling, and a cautionary note. You right up front, you were talking about how dangerous it is and how expensive it is and how many things can go wrong.
Yes, well, the whole reason why I went out to the oil rig in the first place was because I wanted to experience the sort of Mount Everest of oil drilling. I wanted to know what the greatest extremes and risks were going to are in the oil industry. And I can tell you, it's not easy to get on one of these rigs. It took me many failed attempts to get clearance to go, and I ended up writing a story for Wired magazine about the technology of deep sea drilling and what they've done in recent years to be able to penetrate these depths and these both of water and depths into the earth.
They're not only a mile under water, but then they go like a mile or two lower than that into the earth.
Oh my goodness! Well, in my case, that's true for the Horizon, but the Cajun Express, which is a sibling to the Horizon, they're almost identical rigs in that they're capable of operating in almost 10,000 feet, or rather, roughly 8,000 feet of water and drilling at depths of roughly 35,000 feet below sea level. The next generation of these rigs going to be capable of drilling in 10,000 feet of water and 40,000 feet into the seabeds or below sea level, rather. So now you have to understand, I mean, the miracle of technology that these rigs represent, and I say that fully aware that it's an absolute, it's preposterous failure of technology that we're capable of doing this, of drilling at these depths, both.
But
in
when
water.
Something goes wrong, they don't know how to fix
right,
it.
Right. Like, we're capable of putting rigs 30,000 feet into the earth and floating on a raft, but we don't know how to plug a leak.
Were you surprised when the Deepwater Horizon blew up?
I was surprised. Yes, absolutely. Partly because, again, we're talking about technology that is so sophisticated. I mean, it makes landing a man on the moon look like child's play. I mean, quite honestly, what they're doing out there, and my Chevron host, I was invited out to the rig to report this story by an executive of Chevron, and he likened the challenge to flying above Yankee Stadium in New York City in a jumbo jet, 30,000 feet above the stadium, and trying to and throwing a baseball down and trying to hit home plate dead center.
And the next question is, why are we doing that?
Well, we're
it's
doing
because
it.
We can't find oil anywhere else.
Yeah, we're doing it because the land resources have been tapped. The United States' oil reserves on land, or our oil reserves in general, have been declining since the 70s. Peak oil in the U.S. was, I think, in 1971. For the past 40 years, we've essentially been pursuing resources at greater and greater depths and greater risk.
When those first reports came in saying that with the explosion and everything, that there was little or no oil leakage, did you believe them? Since you had actual experience being on one of those rigs and seeing how they work?
Well, saying that there was little or no leakage.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, the truth is that, yes, the blowout preventer, which is that, you know, very complex, confusing device that's on the sea floor and that's supposed to have redundancies and redundancies that can cap the, you know, or that can prevent a catastrophe like this. I, you know, was walked through, you know, how those things work. I don't think I could possibly relay, you know, to you the complexities of their functions mm-hmm. without a triple PhD. But no, I mean, I have to say I trusted that the technology would work because, by the way, you know, there are thousands and thousands of rigs that are in the Gulf of Mexico that are drilling. I mean, that depth, they're, you know, in 5,000 feet of water. I mean, that's deep, but they're going much deeper than that and not having this kind of catastrophe. I mean, it's true that it's very novel technology, and they haven't used it.
The fact of the matter is, these guys apparently don't know how to fix a problem if it occurs.
That's true, and that's largely because there haven't been problems in the past, and the technology has worked fairly well. I mean, again, it's very new technology, and they just have no experience. I mean, this is only in the last decade that they've been pursuing these frontiers. I mean, when I went on the Cajun Express in 2008, it had just for the first time drilled a well at that depth. It was record breaking. I mean, this is the final frontier. This is a new final frontier.
Amanda, do you feel that we should be drilling in those depths?
I think that it's short-sighted and irresponsible to say that that we shouldn't, and that we won't, because the fact of the matter is, I think that ultra deep sea drilling is inevitable and it's going to continue for years.
Hold that thought. We have to take a quick break for news. We'll be back with Amanda Little and Doug Stingel talking about green energy and the Midwest Renewable Energy Fair. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51. We'll be back after this. We are back on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network. I'm Glenn Moberg. The subject today, green energy, the oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico, and the Midwest Renewable Energy Fair, the 21st annual, taking place this weekend in Custer, Wisconsin. And if you stop by, and I hope you do, please stop by our Wisconsin Public Radio booth and, well, say hi. Our guests, Doug Stingel, he's with the Midwest Renewable Energy Association. He's their programs director. And keynote speaker, one of the keynote speakers, Amanda Little, who has written a book called Power Trip, From Oil Wells to Solar Cells, A Ride to the Renewable Future. Amanda has been on a deep water oil rig. And Amanda, when we left the conversation before the news break, you were telling us that you thought it would be short-sighted for us to simply stop all deep water drilling. Could you explain that?
Yes. I think that I'd like to start with a fact, which is that Americans consume roughly 750 million gallons of oil in a single day, which is roughly 20 times more than the total estimated volume of crude that has leaked into the Gulf so far. And per capita, we consume about 30% more oil each day than Europeans per capita, and about 40% more than the Japanese. So we have almost what you could call an obesity epidemic of oil usage in this country. We consume lots more than everyone else, and our own domestic supplies are dwindling. So the problem is that if we close our own shorelines to oil development, it simply shifts the risks of offshore drilling, which are extremely grave, as we all know, to the coastlines of other nations, of other oil-producing nations, such as Nigeria, South Korea, Kazakhstan, Angola, and so forth, where oil spills are routine.
Shouldn't we be trying to just wean ourselves off of oil enough so that maybe we can drill in shallow water or drill in other places, but certainly not in deep water where we can't fix problems if they occur?
Well, Glenn, you hit the bullseye, in my opinion. I mean, what's strikingly absent from the conversation about the oil spill right now is the issue of conservation, of reducing our supply. If we don't reduce our supply, and I think that we could start by right now offsetting every gallon of oil that's spewing into the Gulf, we could offset that, just each one of us, by taking small measures in our daily lives to reduce our own oil usage, carpooling, taking public transit, inflating our tires, so on. There's so much that we can all do to conserve oil in our own lives, and it's just a single step forward in preempting a crisis like this. Now, let me say that I absolutely believe that we shouldn't be drilling at these depths and in these circumstances if we can't mitigate the impacts and the costs in a crisis like this.
I mean, we may have destroyed the Gulf of Mexico.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and this is one of America's jewels, our shoreline, our Caribbean shoreline. And who knows what's happening to the other island nations down there, the coral reefs off the coast of Cuba, off of Jamaica, perhaps even Belize will get affected at some time.
That's true.
And an ecosystem that you simply can't replace.
That's absolutely true. The reality is that as long as we demand it, the industry is going to go to further and further extremes to get this stuff. And I think it needs to be said very clearly, oil offshore drilling is the final frontier. It is inevitable for decades to come because the land supplies are getting ever more difficult to come by. They're dwindling. And so the offshore regions are the final frontier. I mean, I can't tell you how many oil executives told me that this is where the technology is innovating. This is where the industry is going, is spending lots and lots of R&D to figure out how to get to these deep sea areas, because they're the ones that we haven't tapped yet.
And Doug Stengel, I'd like you to react to this conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, what I think Amanda said there that I really relate to is that there are those simple things that we can do to start to conserve energy and conserve our fuel. And great opportunity to come out and learn about some of those things at the energy fair. You know, we as humans tend to be creatures of habit, and we kind of do what's easiest to us. And a lot of folks kind of think that if you want to do conservation or if you want to try and use renewable energy, that it's not easy, it's not simple, and it's a big change. And it's not really that bad. There are a lot of things that you can do that are simple, that aren't going to affect your life, that you can do to reduce the consumption, your personal consumption of oil, your personal consumption of other fossil fuels, that are really simple and that you can learn about. And at the Midwest Renewable Energy Association, what we are is a nonprofit educational organization. So what we're doing is trying to teach people about those kind of things.
What I'm going to do right now is play a short clip by somebody who's been quite critical of the oil industry and the deep water drilling. It's our incumbent and retiring Congressman Dave Obey, who has spent 41 years representing North Central Wisconsin, and who had these things to say about the oil spill when I talked to him last week.
It's happened because of this mindset that somehow government regulation must be avoided at all costs. This country has acted like it's a permanent president of an optimist club, and now we're recognizing these companies don't have a clue about how to clean things up. They're flying by the seat of their pants. We're also paying for the fact that since Jimmy Carter left office, this country has systematically disinvested in other kinds of energy research. If we had not gutted funding for alternative energy and energy conservation program over the last 30 years, we wouldn't be nearly as reliant on Gulf oil as we are, and we certainly wouldn't be nearly as reliant on Middle East oil.
The first thing Ronald Reagan did when he took over from Jimmy Carter was take the solar panels off the top of the White House. We are hearing the cry from a number of people, a number of Republican voices, including Sarah Palin, and now both of the Republicans running for the Senate, saying this spill means that we should now open up drilling in the Arctic Wildlife Refuge because it would be safer than deep offshore drilling. Your reaction?
Wacky, wacky, wacky. That's my reaction. Sarah Palin, you mean, is this the Sarah Palin who kept crying during the campaign, drill, baby, drill, drill, baby, drill? it's the advice of people like Sarah Palin that got us in trouble in the first place. The Bush administration was owned lock, stock, and barrel by the oil industry. You had government official after official who had been on oil company boards. There was even an oil tanker named after Condoleezza Rice, for instance.
Any chance of getting a green energy bill through Congress or through the Senate, given the current climate in Washington?
I don't know whether this will bring people to their senses or not, but there is no short-term fix for this problem. We are right now dependent on all of these sources of energy, and we've got to wean ourselves off that. And the only way we do it is by investing much larger amounts in both the private sector and the public sector.
Congressman Dave Obie talking about the Gulf oil spill and the need for a green energy policy. Amanda Little, as someone, again, who has been on these deep water oil rigs and who has, I would say, a sympathetic view of the efforts that are being made to make them safe and make them work, how would you respond to what the congressman just said?
I agree. I think that it is a crisis of mindset, and I think it's true that these companies have been able to fly by the seat of their pants, and it's an example of regulatory negligence, of negligence of corporate safety oversight, and technology failures. But all those things, I think, can be addressed. I think that we can come up with the technology solutions. I think that we can develop the proper safety measures and regulatory oversight. I think that there's another mindset problem, and the mindset is that we're spending so much time blaming BP, blaming the oil industry, that most of us as consumers are not identifying our own role in this. The reason why they're going to these extreme measures is that demand for oil is so extreme, and we all participate in that. I do, I drive hybrid cars, I'm a, environmental and clean energy advocate, and I participate in the consumption of oil just as much as the next guy. And, I travel by plane a lot and so on. So I guess what I'm saying is, I think that the mindset is twofold. We have to change our mindset on at a political level and be much more vigilant and hold these companies accountable for their actions in these very risky scenarios. But we as consumers also have to hold ourselves accountable, that we participate in the demand, that reducing our demand and participating in our homes, making our homes more efficient, our cars more efficient, is just as important as pointing the blame at BP and saying it's all the company's fault.
Doug?
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more with you, Amanda. We definitely need to look at ourselves, and these are things that we can do to just reduce our consumption, and it's a simple step, and it's very simple things that we can do. And so when we look at that in the oil spill, first priority, we've got to stop that. And then our next priority is, where do we go next? How do we avoid this problem in the future? And we can avoid that problem in the future by, again, weaning ourselves off of those fossil fuels or reducing our consumption so that we can move to other sources as well.
Route 51 Regional Talk Radio, our guests, Amanda Little, the author of Power Trip, one of the keynote speakers of the Midwest Energy Fair that's happening this weekend in Custer, Wisconsin. We've also got Doug Stingle of the Midwest Renewable Energy Association. 1-800-780-9742 if you'd like to join the conversation. 1-800-780-9742. Let's go to the phones. Ned in Lake Dubé, you are on Route 51. Hello, Ned.
Thank you for taking my call. I've been a life member of MREA for a number of years, and I absolutely enjoy so thoroughly these energy fairs every June. Been going for over a dozen years, and the keynote speakers, such as Amanda Little, and also I would like to at least mention somebody else named Bill McKibben is going to be keynoter. That should be enough. If anyone's into environmental issues, that should be enough to perk up your ears right away. And he is going to be Saturday at 1, and Amanda's going to be Sunday at 1 o'clock. They're just outstanding, and I'm looking forward to buying both their books and getting them signed. And so many other workshops that you can pick from, and it's just an all-around positive experience, just so wonderful, I can hardly put it in words.
And there will be a lot of solar energy on Saturday. We've got a forecast for sunshine, but temperatures of 78 degrees. It should actually be pleasant, which
should be great.
Which is nice, yeah. when you're at an event like that. Yeah, Ned, thank you so much for the phone call.
You're welcome.
And again, if you would like to join the conversation, 1-800-780-9742. Going to take a short break. We will be back with more about America's green energy future right after this.
The businesses, professionals, and organizations that support Wisconsin Public Radio's programming play an important part in our financial health. When you visit a WPR sponsor, please let them know that you appreciate their support of this station. Thanks very much.
I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We're talking to Amanda Little, one of the keynote speakers at the Midwest Renewable Energy Fair in Custer, Wisconsin, and the Energy Association's Doug Stingle. If you would like to join us, 1-800-780-9742. Amanda, in your book, you talk about the town square in Beaumont, Texas, where there was a huge oil strike at the turn of the last century, the big gusher that really kind of set the stage for an entire century and another 10 years of what America would become. And now T. Boone Pickens is developing wind farms in the very same location.
That's true. There are some staggering photos of oil derricks, those sort of nodding donkey, those iconic images we think of, you know, that represent oil drilling, right up against these new shiny silver wind turbines. I met with T. Boone Pickens. It was one of my adventures in my power trip, and we went out and met some of the ranchers and former oilmen in East Texas that would be housing some of his windmills, and he said, you know, look, basically wind farms put oil drilling to shame, because when you'd have a well that would produce beautifully for, you know, 10 years, that would just dry up and produce no income for your family and sort of leave you hanging and leave these ghost towns in its wake. And now, you know, let's say you have a wind turbine on your land that does $20,000 per year of income, you know, requiring very little maintenance, and it could be blowing out there for a century, maybe more. So that generates, you know, possibly $2 million of income for that family over the course of a century.
We have a company, a local company in Wisconsin Rapids named Energy Composites, that is in the process of building a factory that will employ 600 people. The money came in through the federal stimulus bill a year and a half ago. And they're going to be building these wind turbine blades with an eye to putting them in the Great Lakes, because the wind is always constant there. It's exactly the right speed, and they're close to all these major population centers in Lake Michigan. And part of the problem, I think, is the electric grid that we have, because wherever you put solar farms or wind farms, you've got to transport the energy somehow to another location. And you write in your book, former Energy Secretary Bill Richardson said we're the world superpower with a third world energy grid.
That's absolutely right. I actually, in another of my adventures in power trip, I crawled inside down a manhole in downtown Manhattan and crawled down inside the New York City electricity grid to just look at how vulnerable that particular city is, and it's representative of so many other parts of the U.S. electricity grid.
You write about the blackout in the year 2003.
That's right.
A series of events that nobody could stop because the grid just didn't have what it took to take the power that it needed to take.
That's right. Well, there was a very poignant moment in this experience when I was looking at this vulnerable grid, and it was just this sort of gory cross section of the grid. It looked almost like the, you know, like a surgery of, you know, a mass of intestines or something very disorganized, I should say. And these pulsing cables were held together literally with duct tape. They had eroded, you know, over time under the stresses of the city and the salt seeping down, and all the vibrations of cars moving and so on. These wires are under so much stress. And I asked the guy Dennis Romano, who was the engineer taking me down there, what does this mean? Why is this grid on the verge of collapse? And he said, you just can't put any more power through these wires. They're maxing out. We have no more room to put them. Look, he said, where do you suggest we put more wires? And he said, and we can't, he said, you can't put 10 pounds of bologna in a 5-pound bag.
So we have to find a way to replace the grid, essentially, or at least that's a lot of work, a lot of money, a lot of infrastructure.
That's true. I think the two single most important technological innovations in the near term are the grid and storage. Once we have replaced the grid with a super grid that's, you know, very efficient, smart, superconducting grid, and once we have tackled the problem of how do we store electricity, how can we take wind that's intermittent and sun that's intermittent and store that energy over time so we can dispense it on demand, that will be the breakthrough.
Yeah, and I think you guys have kind of touched on something that goes along those lines. Another major problem we have in the U.S. today is unemployment, and if we can make a commitment as a country to shift our energy sources to new technologies, we can put a lot of people back to work. We can have an Apollo program for renewable energy, and we can put people back to work benefiting ourselves.
Well, Dwight David Eisenhower built the interstate highway system to benefit the automobile and the oil and gas culture. Why can't we have a green energy Manhattan-style project in order to take us where we need to go?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we need it.
The ingenuity that got us into this mess is going to get us out of it.
And there's that optimism again. Amanda Little, one of the keynote speakers at the Energy Fair, I would be remiss to be speaking. Is it Saturday night?
Saturday at 1 p.m.
Saturday at 1 p.m., Bill McKibben. Here's a brief clip from an interview we did with him on Route 51 a couple of years ago.
Climate change makes us understand that the problem is bigger than we ever suspected and that we're going to need fundamental changes. The temperature is going to continue to rise for the next foreseeable future, but the real question is whether it's going to rise fast enough and far enough to set off unstoppable complications, things like the melt of the Greenland and West Antarctic ice sheets. We're getting very near those thresholds, which means we got to work fast. Human beings have used more natural resources since the end of World War II than in all of human history beforehand. And, you know, with unbelievable environmental problems highlighted by the climate change we're now seeing. And it's all been largely for naught. We're past the point where more is better. We're at the point where instead of more stuff, what we want are more community, more relationship, more connection.
Amanda Little, your reaction to those words by Bill McKibben.
Oh, so poignant and powerful. He's just an inspiration to all of us. And I think that it's true what you're seeing, these new areas of growth and innovation and possibility, they're happening in communities. They're happening in neighborhoods. People are reaching into their own homes. They're teaming up with their neighbors, with their schools, their churches, and they're empowering themselves to create efficiencies in their lives, to educate each other, and it goes beyond party lines. It's young people, it's old people, it's experts, it's novices, and it's just so exciting to see that. So to me, to travel from my own hometown of Nashville, Tennessee, to come up to Custer, Wisconsin, and see what's happening in your neck of the woods is just going to be thrilling. I'm really excited because nothing gives you more optimism than seeing progress at the grassroots.
Doug, a quick last word to get people out this weekend?
Yeah, absolutely. Amanda's right. And that's how this organization and this fair started. It was grassroots 21 years ago. Some people got together and wanted to educate folks about it. So we hope we can see you out there this year, just 5 miles east of Stevens Point, just off of Highway 10. We'll be there Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
We want to thank today's guests, Amanda Little, author of Power Trip, From Oil Wells to Solar Cells, Our Ride to the Renewable Future. You can find out more about her and her work at amandalittle.com. Also, Doug Stingle, Programs Director for the Midwest Renewable Energy Association. And a reminder that the 21st Annual Energy Fair takes place this weekend in Custer, Wisconsin. Check out our Wisconsin Public Radio booth while you're there. I'm Glenn Moberg. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Dean Moberg. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Special music today by Johnny Cash, John Prine, and Jesse Colin Young. Thanks again for riding along with us today in our electric vehicle. And until next week, we're heading out of town. Come on.